This is Audible.
This is the book on rental property investing, how to create wealth and passive income through smart buy and hold real estate investing. Written by Brandon Turner, narrated by Brandon Turner, and published by Bigger Pockets Publishing, LLC. What if I told you that you can make millions of dollars in real estate doing nothing but sitting on a beach? Pina coladas, little white umbrellas, endless sand. Sounds pretty great, right? Well, that is not going to happen, at least not anytime soon. If you are looking for an easy path to riches, rental properties are probably not the right avenue for you. I know I probably just lost half of those who picked up this book, and that's okay. I know that millions more are willing to do what is necessary to find success, even if that path is more difficult than the late night television infomercials would have you believe. Obviously, people flock to real estate for a reason. In my opinion, real estate can provide the best, safest, fastest path to financial freedom compared to any other method used to build wealth. I've seen it in my own life, which I'll explain in a moment. But first, let's talk about what this book will not teach you. If you are looking for a book written by the latest guru, you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to learn some secret strategy that I discovered that no one else knows. After all, I'm not anything special. In fact, I'm just like you. I may be farther along on my real estate journey than you are, or I may be years behind you, in which case I hope to learn from you as well. The truth is, we're all on the same journey together playing the greatest game ever invented. In writing this book, I hope to share with you the lessons I've learned so far, both the successes and the mistakes. And I believe these lessons will help you achieve greater life than you've ever imagined. Moreover, you should never learn from just one person, I believe, and anyone who says otherwise is probably trying to sell you something. The best education comes from experience, and by learning from the collective experiences of others, you can supercharge your real estate ambitions to find greater success faster and with less drama. Therefore, in the pages of this book, I've incorporated the lessons and stories of real estate investors from the Bigger Pockets community in an effort to help you gain the greatest perspective. Together, as a community, let's help each other find financial freedom through real estate investing. What do you want? Let me ask you a very basic question. What is it that you want? Now go ahead and say it out loud. Money? A new house? To fire your boss? Quit your job and work for yourself? How about a better retirement? More wealth for your kids? A summer in Europe? Longer sleep? Whatever it is, yell it out. Unless, of course, you are sitting in a Starbucks right now, in which case you probably shouldn't yell. But I would like a tall, extra hot, peppermint hot chocolate, please. Let me share with you one of my all-time favorite quotes. Michael Jordan, yes, that Michael Jordan, once said, "Some people want it to happen, some wish it would happen, others make it happen." And what kind of person are you? Now, there's nothing wrong with wanting things in life. Don't feel silly about identifying material things you want when you answer that question. Having goals are great, but it is not enough. You need action too. You will need to get off your butt and change your world yourself because no one is going to do it for you. You know, my goal in writing this book, not only to give you theory and hope, to also give you the tools and knowledge you need to reach your goals. You already know that real estate can change your life. Now it's time to learn how to make that happen. It's time to take action. So are you committed to taking action? Are you committed to dedicating your spare time? Are you committed to replacing daydreams with strategies? Are you committed to investing your money? I hope you answered yes to all these questions, and don't worry if you don't actually have the money or the spare time or the knowledge just yet. If you are committed to giving this a try, I will help you get there. Remember, you are not doing this for me. You're doing it for you. As you work through this book, I encourage you to not only read, but also internalize every concept. Don't simply pass your eyes over the words without understanding the concept behind what I'm talking about. Reread sections if you need to. Ask other experienced investors about the topics. Share the lessons you're learning with your significant other as you digest them. Question everything I say and do whatever is necessary to have it make sense in your own mind. And take your time. A little about me. If you do this, Brandon, you're going to go broke, be homeless, and ruin your life. Please reconsider. Now, this was not the response I was hoping for when I finally told my parents I wasn't going to go to law school, despite months of studying and a strong score on the law school entrance exam. Instead, I had set my sights on becoming a real estate investor. I've been raised in a go to school, get a great job with a great company and be responsible sort of household. You know, I can't fault my parents for that mentality. After all, this is how they themselves have been raised. My parents are incredible people who simply wanted the best for me, but I needed to do things differently. The path I had in mind was neither better nor worse, just different. My entrepreneurial itch led me to the fascinating world of real estate investing, and specifically to rental properties. The idea of using my own creativity in place of cash to build passive income exhilarated me. However, my ambitions hit an almost immediate roadblock with my parents' warning of catastrophic failure. My tenants wouldn't pay, they feared. I'd have to deal with evictions. I would lose all my money, lose my properties, end up on the street, start dealing meth, and for good measure, probably end up killing someone in a bar fight. All because I wanted to be a real estate investor. At that point, I was forced to face my future head on. Do I abandon my newly discovered dreams and come back to Earth? Should I suck it up, stop complaining, and go to law school? After all, my parents had a point. A good law education pretty much guaranteed a good job. A good job meant stability. Real estate, on the other hand, didn't seem very stable. What if my tenants wouldn't pay? What if I had to deal with an eviction? How could I survive? Before giving up and accepting what seemed to be my fate, I turned to the only source I knew at the time to ask, Google, which brought me to this brand new website called Bigger Pockets. Suddenly, a switch flipped in my brain. There on the screen were other aspiring and practicing investors with the same questions and concerns. And more importantly, there were answers. My entrepreneurial ambitions didn't necessarily mean I would end up a meth dealer wanted for murder. My quest for knowledge brought me to Bigger Pockets, for which I now blog, design, write, teach, network, and help out however I can. But that is a story for another day. In short, I had discovered that all my questions had answers. There was hope. Financial freedom was not just a buzzword late-night charlatans used to sell their programs. Financial freedom was a real thing, enjoyed by millions of people all around the world. And I wanted it with every ounce of my being. So I confronted my parents' concerns, quit my job, walked away from my law school application, and jumped into full-time real estate investing, acquiring dozens of rental units over the next decade. You know, I just turned 30 this year, and I'm not a multimillionaire. I don't drive a Tesla yet, and I definitely don't spend my life on the beach, though I do enjoy an occasional vacation. What I do have, however, is financial freedom. Because of my real estate investments, I'm able to live the kind of life I choose, not one just given to me. As I continue to earn more money, I can pour that extra income into additional investments. My current investments are allowing me to buy more investments, a concept known as exponential growth, and it's freaking awesome. Thanks to my rental properties, I'm creating an awesome future for myself, my wife, and our future children. Most real estate authors and gurus tend to be reluctant about sharing information about their personal investments, but I say screw that. As of today, I have 44 units spread out over about a dozen properties, both single family and multifamily. In the beginning, I worked hard to acquire them, and now I try to pick up a few new ones every year. My wife and I manage the properties ourselves, splitting the duties and sharing in the rewards. To help us keep our life sane and manageable, we collaborate with some great individuals, including an incredible part-time office manager, numerous contractors, and other valuable professionals. We buy nice stuff, but we don't overdo it. We travel a lot, but in a modest way. We hang out with our friends and family every chance we can, and we absolutely enjoy life to the fullest. Real estate has been a major contributor to our lifestyle design, and furthermore, I'm not done with my journey. I'm not writing this book from the position of, back in the day, this is how it was done. I'm writing it in real time as I live the very life and practice the work I'm describing. As I said before, this is a journey you and I are on together, and I still have more to learn. I'll make mistakes, I'll screw up, get frustrated, and feel discouraged. I don't have it all together. But I hope that this book will be different because of this. I can't tell you how many books I've read that have been written by has-been investors who no longer invest, and they're teaching tactics that no longer work because the game has changed. I'm happy for them that they achieved their financial freedom and they were able to retire, but that's just not me. I only want to teach what I actually do. About this book. This book will likely ruin your life, as great books tend to do. It will challenge the way you look at life, finances, and real estate. It will lead you to envision a different life for yourself, one not suggested by your parents, society, your alma mater, or the media. It will encourage you to step out and create a whole new path for yourself, one that you construct out of thin air. It will introduce you to numerous ideas, paths, strategies, and concepts for achieving financial freedom through rental properties. It will give you answers to questions you never knew to ask, and likely leave you with a few more questions I didn't think to answer. But don't worry, that's not a bad thing. My goal with this book is to create the single greatest guide on rental property investing ever written. Trust me, I've read hundreds. In each chapter, I will explore one specific step in rental property investing, explaining it in depth and helping you understand how to navigate every stage of the process. Whether you're just getting started or already own hundreds of units, I hope this book will help you make more income, retire sooner, unlock more free time, amass more units, or achieve whatever other goal you might have. Yes, this is an ambitious undertaking, but I'm up for the challenge. Are you? Finally, I believe one pass through this book will not be enough. I include so many lessons, tips, stories, and details that you'll likely remember only 20% of what you read. Do you want to only be 20% prepared to take on your first or next rental property investment? I didn't think so. Therefore, I encourage you to read this entire book not only once, but multiple times. You'll never look back on your life and say, boy, I sure wish I hadn't spent so much time preparing for my future. As good old Abe Lincoln famously remarked, give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 hours sharpening the axe. It's time to sharpen your axe. I'll see you in chapter one. Your friend, Brandon Turner. Chapter one, why I love rental properties. Maya Angelou once said, my mission in life is not merely to survive, but to thrive, and to do so with some passion, some compassion, some humor, and some style. My eyes were glued to the 9 simple words I held between my shaking fingers in that dark, all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet restaurant on a cold Minnesota afternoon. Surely, it was a coincidence that had to be, right? Or perhaps someone was playing an extremely elaborate prank on us. No, that would be impossible. This really just happened. It was a hot summer afternoon, several days after my high school graduation. My best friend Matt and I had decided to venture down to our favorite restaurant, a hole-in-the-wall Chinese buffet restaurant on the outskirts of Minneapolis, to grab an early dinner. We talked about life, girls, our college plans, our crazy friends, the latest small-town gossip, and all the other pressing issues that two 18-year-old guys in the Midwest typically discuss over sweet and sour chicken, fried rice, wontons, Jell-O, and unlimited soda refills. As our conversation began to wind down, the tall, middle-aged waitress came to collect the dirty plates and drop off our check. Neither of us reached for the bill, though. Instead, we reached for the 2 fortune cookies that lay atop the overturned invoice on the table. Brandon, Matt asked, as we grow up, do you want to live an ordinary life or an extraordinary one? As I held my fortune cookie, still in its wrapper, I thought about the question for a moment. I was an ordinary kid in an ordinary town with ordinary grades, an ordinary job, and an ordinary outlook on life. Things seemed pretty good to me, so as I peeled the clear plastic wrapper off my fortune cookie, I looked Matt in the eye and replied, I'll take an ordinary life. I'm perfectly happy with that. In reality, I didn't believe I could ever achieve something more than ordinary, so why kid myself? I could handle ordinary. I deserved ordinary. I was destined for ordinary. I cracked my fortune cookie in half and carefully retrieved the white strip of paper nestled inside. Printed in red ink were 9 words I'll never forget. There is no such thing as an ordinary life. Why do I love rental properties so much? It's no secret that I love rental properties. Sure, flipping and wholesaling properties might be fun. Notes and tax liens might have fewer tenants. The stock market might be more popular. But rental properties are my true business love. Let me explain why. The ability to purchase with leverage. Rental properties are great because you can borrow the bank's or someone else's money to increase the potential return. This is known as leverage. In other words, you don't need to have 100% of the property's purchase price on hand to be able to buy it. I'll explain this in more depth later in the chapter, but for now I'll say this. Rental properties allow me to buy large properties for far less cash than I might need to purchase stocks or other investments. The ability to hustle for greater returns. Not only can I leverage my cash, but I can also leverage my time and abilities to make magic happen in this game, something difficult to do with other investments. In other words, I can hustle. If I wanted to do the work needed to rehab a property, I can do that. If I want to leverage my networking skills to raise money, I can do that instead. If I want to leverage my knowledge and time to find better deals that provide an even greater return, I can do that. Rental property investing gives me the ability to hustle for my future. Ability to manage my investment directly. I'll fully admit I'm a bit of a control freak, and that drives me towards rental properties in a powerful way. With a rental property, I am directly responsible for the outcome of my investment. It is up to me to analyze a property before I buy it. It is up to me to ensure the property is in good condition to rent. It's up to me to ensure the property is running at peak performance. I don't have to depend on some board of directors in New York City for my life direction. I can manage my investment directly and personally. People always need a place to live. The real estate market will go up and down, but the beauty of rental properties is that the demand will never end. People always need a place to live. So unlike investing in the latest tech trend or in your brother's startup, real estate is an investment that will last. Furthermore, because increasing student loans are making qualifying for a mortgage more difficult and our culture increasingly values mobility, the demand for rental properties will only grow over time. It's worked for millions of people before. Perhaps one of the greatest benefits to rental property investing is the proof of concept handed down by millions of successful investors before us. Since the dawn of human civilization, landlords have built wealth by owning and leasing out rental properties. Today is no different. According to a joint survey produced by BiggerPockets and Memphis Invest in 2012, 1 out of 8, or 28.1 million Americans, either consider themselves to be residential real estate investors or own residential investment properties today. Fairly stable and predictable. Yes, events such as the market collapse in 2007 do happen, but rental property owners who were investing for long-term gains did not suffer like those who were trying to be fancy, or as my good friend and fellow landlord Jordan says, punk drunk on greed. Furthermore, I would argue that the 2007 real estate crash was predictable for those who were paying attention. Because one of the defining characteristics of the real estate market is the boom and bust cycle that never goes away. Once an investor learns to identify the cycle, the old adage of buy low, sell high becomes much easier to achieve. We'll talk about that cycle later. Incredible variety. Rental properties also offer an incredible amount of variety within the asset class. I can invest in single family homes, small multifamily properties, large multifamily apartments, office buildings, high-end, low-end, Section 8, transient, and any other number of options. Then, within each of these classes, I can find larger properties, smaller properties, ones that are newer, older, taller, shorter, ugly, beautiful, and so on. The possibilities are endless. As famed investor Donald Trump once said, it's tangible, it's solid, it's beautiful, it's artistic from my standpoint, and I just love real estate. Simple and straightforward. Although I'll never claim that working with rental properties is easy, I do maintain that investing in rental properties is fairly simple and straightforward. Sure, it involves more than just buying a piece of property and placing renters in it, but the strategies for success are not overly difficult to learn or master. To help, a tremendous amount has been written on the topic by those who have mastered it. Books such as this one, podcasts, videos, blogs, forums, networking groups, mentorships, and more can be found to help you learn nearly everything you will ever need to know about real estate. In addition, knowledgeable people are available to help. Several months ago, I ran into a situation I didn't know how to handle. A smoking tenant accidentally lit part of the outside of her house on fire and claimed she hadn't. I reached out to the other investors on BiggerPockets forums and received some excellent advice on how to proceed, and it didn't cost me a thing. I can buy below market value. I was raised by a garage sale mom who taught me the value always haggling for the best deal. As a result, one of my favorite reasons for investing in rental properties is my ability to find properties that I can buy below market value. In other words, I can shop for a great deal. Finding properties that are worth $100,000 that I can buy for $80,000 truly excites me, and it is an integral part of how I've been able to build wealth so quickly over the past 8 years. And I will definitely cover the strategy in a lot more depth later in this book. Insider trading is legal. In the Wall Street world, there's a concept known as insider trading, which is when an investor makes a profit on a stock because he or she had access to some secret bit of information from the inside that helped him or her buy or sell at the right time. This practice is not just discouraged in the stock market, it's also illegal and can even land you in jail. Just ask Martha Stewart. However, as a rental property investor, I can leverage any secret knowledge I can find to benefit from my investments. If I know that a new light rail is moving into the neighborhood, I can jump in and swoop up properties before word gets out. If I hear that a major industry is leaving an area, I can get out of that area before the market declines. And unlike the stock market, this is 100% legal and encouraged in the rental property realm. not having to be present to make money. I love the idea that I can make money without physically needing to be present when investing in real estate. Because that's called a job when you have to be there in order to make money, and I want to avoid that. However, understand that real estate is not generally a 100% passive activity, but over time, the systems you create can help you outsource most of the landlording process. The dollars will roll in whether you get out of bed in the morning or not. Multiple ways to profit. One of the greatest benefits of rental property investing, especially compared with other real estate niches and strategies, is the opportunity to capitalize on all four of real estate's major profit sources. This point is so important that I believe it deserves its own section, which follows next. The four wealth generators. When I first decided to become a real estate investor, my inclination was to become a full-time house flipper. I love the idea of taking a property in disrepair and making it shine. However, I quickly realized that when I was flipping houses, I was building a job rather than an investment. Although I could make good money when I sold a property, I was capitalizing on only one source of wealth generation, and when I stopped working, the money stopped flowing. Then I discovered another investing niche that took advantage of not one, but four different sources of wealth generation, which of course is rental properties. Those four sources are appreciation, cash flow, tax savings, and the loan paydown. Let me explain each one of those in more detail. Number one, appreciation. When I was in high school, my dad bought himself a gorgeous 1969 Chevy Camaro with a convertible top, leather interior, and roaring engine. Lucky for me, he's a generous guy and had no problem letting his 17-year-old son drive the car around on special occasions, including a couple proms. He held onto that car for about 5 years and sold it soon after I graduated, for roughly $5,000 more than he paid for it. In other words, unlike the cars most of us drive every day, this car actually went up in value, as classic cars tend to do. In a way, my dad enjoyed the use of a classic American muscle car for free for 5 years, thanks to appreciation. Now, by appreciation, I don't mean enjoying the car, though yes, we did appreciate it that way too. I'm talking about appreciation in the sense of positive financial investment. By its simplest definition, appreciation is an increase in the value of an asset over time. So a muscle car worth $15,000 in 1999 might be worth $20,000 in 2004, or a nice wine might be worth $45 the day it was bottled, but $455 a few years later. Or a house might be worth $100,000 in 1990, and it might be worth $500,000 today because of appreciation. Now, there are actually two kinds of appreciation in real estate, natural and forced. Natural appreciation is a natural tendency for prices to rise over time. This kind of appreciation is tied to several factors, including inflation, scarcity, and good old American greed. When the house your parents purchased in 1955 could be sold 40 years later for 10 times its original value, that is natural appreciation. Forced appreciation is also mentioned often in the investing space, and it's the concept of improving a property so the property's value becomes greater. For example, turning a two-bedroom home into a three-bedroom home can increase its value immediately. Adding a second bathroom can likewise increase its value immediately, and increasing the amount of profit a property can earn, especially in a large multifamily, can increase its value immediately as well. Each of these tactics involved forced appreciation. As I mentioned, when I flip a house, I capitalize on only one kind of wealth generation, which is appreciation, primarily forced appreciation. But rental properties capitalize on all four. You know, great wealth has been built through appreciation, of course. I know numerous homeowners who bought a simple home in California 20 years ago and are now multimillionaires because of that one purchase. Appreciation is a powerful tool and something investors definitely should seriously look at and consider. However, as great a generator as appreciation may be, it does have a dark side. In the early 2000s, the real estate market across the country was appreciating like crazy. People bought terrible properties and made a killing just on the appreciation. They began losing sight of the math behind an investment and simply bought whatever they could because they could always sell it for more later. Who cares if the property loses money every month, they thought. I'll just sell it in a few years and make so much more. This greater fool theory of investing eventually caught America with its pants down. Prices stopped climbing, unemployment grew, and individuals suddenly realized that they were no longer holding on to an investment, but rather playing in the world's largest game of legalized gambling. And they just lost. This plunged the world into the greatest recession most of us had ever seen and caused more than 4 million completed foreclosures. There's no denying this incredible role appreciation has played in investors' lives, but there's also no denying the risk involved in relying on appreciation to make a profit. I recommend that instead, investors view appreciation as icing on the cake, a bonus that will assist in the investment, but is not the basis for that investment. Investing in locations where appreciation is likely is a wise move, but I don't recommend investing in a bad or marginal deal in hopes that appreciation will bail you out. This is known as speculating, and it isn't much better than getting in your car, driving to Vegas, and betting all your money at the poker table. Will prices continue to climb because of inflation, scarcity, and greed? I have no doubt that they will. Appreciation will make millionaires and billionaires out of certain people reading this book, but your deal analysis should not assume it. Treat appreciation for what it is, a possible reward for an investment done right. Now, let's move on to the second wealth generator in real estate, cash flow. Number two, cash flow. In layman's terms, cash flow is the amount of income left in your business after all the bills have been paid. This amount is often expressed as a monthly dollar amount. In the real estate rental business, cash flow is the income left after paying out expenses that affect the property, like the mortgage, taxes, insurance, vacancies, repairs, capital expenditures, and utilities. Don't worry if you didn't understand all that now. We'll cover it all. Don't worry. Therefore, to truly understand your cash flow, you must truly understand your income and expenses, and this is where most people struggle. After all, we are not magicians, so how do we accurately predict the future cash flow of a property we don't yet own? Although predicting the cash flow of your investment with 100% certainty is impossible, you can generate a fairly close estimate by looking at both historical data and industry average data. Cash flow is perhaps the most important wealth generator for rental property investors. Appreciation is nice, but investors, including me, are looking for a solid, stable return on investment, which is achieved through steady cash flow. I want to see that the property is generating revenue today or as soon as possible after it's purchased. I don't really want to buy a what-if scenario. I want to buy a this-is reality. Cash flow is the lifeblood of any rental property investor. Keep the cash flow pumping, and you'll keep growing. Break even on cash flow or lose money on cash flow, and you are on a path to financial ruin. I'll repeat myself one last time. Buy rental properties that offer cash flow today. Number three, tax savings. The U.S. government likes real estate investors. We provide housing for the increasingly rent-minded population and ensure stability in the economy. As such, the government chooses to reward and encourage real estate investors through favorable tax treatment. Of course, I'm not a CPA and you should always meet with one before making any financial decisions, but let me assure you, I pay far less in taxes than most Americans, despite earning more income, both passive and active, than most. Of course, this doesn't mean you should simply buy any property because of the tax benefits. Tax benefits will never make a bad deal good, but they can make a good deal even better. Number four, loan paydown. The fourth and final wealth generator is known as the loan paydown, which in simple terms is this. You can automate part of your wealth building by simply obtaining a loan on your rental property and using the income from your tenants to pay that loan down each and every month. If you'll recall, I remarked earlier that a property's cash flow is its total income minus its total expenses. One of these expenses is the entire mortgage payment, though in reality, a mortgage payment has two separate parts, the principal and the interest. The principal is the actual balance of the loan being paid down, while the interest is the profit the lender makes based on the interest rate you agree to pay when you secure the loan. For example, you might have a mortgage payment that is $500 a month, and part of that payment amount, the principal, goes to pay down the loan, while the rest, the interest, goes to pay the interest, the profit for the lender. For most U.S. loans, the portion of interest versus principal is defined by a term we know as amortization. At the beginning of a loan, most of the borrower's monthly payment goes towards interest, but as the loan matures or gets older, the payment concentration shifts so that most of the payment eventually goes towards principal. So your payment might be $500 per month for 30 years, and during month one, you'll pay $400 just in interest and only $100 towards the principal. In month two, however, this shifts to $399 in interest and $101 towards principal. Of course, these numbers are just used for example, but that's how amortization generally works. This trend continues until the 30 years have passed, at which point 100% of your final payment goes towards the principal. To best determine exactly how much your monthly payment is applied to principal and how much to interest at different times during the loan payback period, you can use an online amortization calculator like the one found at www.amortization-calc.com. So let's return to the matter at heart, how loan paydown can be a wealth generator. As I mentioned earlier, you can build wealth simply by using the rental income from your tenants to pay down your property's mortgage. It's a somewhat automatic way of building wealth because it happens naturally. I like to joke that I could work a minimum wage job for the rest of my life and never save a penny, and I would still retire a millionaire because my current property mortgages are being paid down by my tenants each and every month. Now, I'm not suggesting that you go out and purchase a property that's at a bad deal, but breaks even in hopes of building wealth that way. Instead, I'm simply explaining how the loan paydown can be a wealth generator for a rental property investor. Keep in mind, though, that this particular wealth generator does not apply if you pay all cash for property, because in that case, there is no loan to be paid off over time. However, without a loan, you get to keep a higher percentage of the property's rental income, so the cash flow would likely be greater. I think this leads us to a very valuable question. How much money does one need to get started? Should a person obtain a loan? Should an aspiring investor pay all cash? What about down payments? Let's talk about that next. How much money does one need to invest in rental properties? In the history of the world, perhaps nothing has killed more real estate ambitions than the belief that one does not have enough money to get started. In fact, I speak with people all the time who don't realize that investing in real estate without having the full 100% purchase price of a property is totally possible. They look at a $100,000 property and try to do the math in their head, thinking, well, if I saved $100 per month from my job, I could start investing 83 years from now. Well, that never gonna happen, so I guess investing in real estate is only for the privileged rich. Not so. Enter leverage. Leverage is a financial term that simply means applying a small amount of force to achieve far greater results. With real estate, leverage usually comes in the form of a loan. Although such a loan could come from a number of different sources, the practice is quite similar. A small down payment is supplied by the real estate investor, and a lender provides the remaining balance of the property's purchase price, and the investor pays that lender a small amount each month until that loan is paid off. For example, I might consider that same $100,000 property, but get a bank to lend me 80% of the purchase price. They would supply $80,000 via a loan, and I would need to come up with just the $20,000 down payment, plus closing costs, which I'll cover in a moment. Let me repeat. Using this approach, I only need to save up $20,000 to buy the property instead of the entire $100,000 purchase price. Yes, I'll need to pay the bank a certain amount each month for many years, but if I've done my math correctly, I'll ultimately make far more income each month than I'll spend on that loan payment. Granted, saving $100 a month, as I mentioned earlier in my example, to save up a $20,000 down payment would still take many years, but other strategies are available for using even more leverage or finding lower priced properties. I'll cover these strategies in a later chapter of this book. And yes, this is pretty basic stuff, but you might be surprised how many new investors fail to realize that this is how the game is played. Leverage, of course, can be both a blessing and a curse. The more leverage you use, the greater risk you may be taking. For example, if you paid 100% cash for a property, you wouldn't have a loan payment due each month. So a 3-month vacancy on your property wouldn't hurt as much. Or if you bought a house with just 5% down and the value of that property dropped by 20%, you would then be underwater on your loan, meaning that you'd owe more money on the house than it's worth. This, in turn, limits your future options and can make selling, refinancing, or doing pretty much anything else with the property very difficult. In fact, leveraging was largely the core cause of the housing collapse and glut of foreclosures in the market 2007 and 2008. Homeowner Hank purchased a home for $100,000 using 100% financing and putting down $0 on the property. When the value of that property later dropped to $80,000 and homeowner Hank lost his job, he couldn't sell the property because he owed far more than what he could get for it. The bank needed $100,000 to be satisfied, but the most Hank could recover by selling the property was $80,000. As a result, homeowner Hank, like millions of others, simply allowed the bank to foreclose on and take the house. So was leverage to blame? Should we pay 100% for rental properties? What's the magic number? I'd like to reframe these questions and force you to think about things in a slightly different light. Rather than discussing how much money to put down for a property, I want to encourage you to think, How secure can I be? There are ways of increasing your security when you use leverage, so let me cover the two main points. First, a property's down payment is not as important as the deal you get. To illustrate this, let me ask you a simple question of which of the following is riskier? A, you purchase a house for $100,000 and you put 30% down, thus obtaining a $70,000 loan. Or B, I buy an identical house for $70,000 with 0% down, thus obtaining a $70,000 loan. So who is at more risk? Even though our loan amounts are identical, I would argue that you are at the greater risk because you have more cash invested. I just did the upfront work required to pay $70,000 and you didn't. I leveraged my creativity in place of a down payment. Secondly, when investing in rental properties, knowledge can help decrease the risk involved with leverage. The better you understand the market, your investment, and how to manage that investment, the lower your risk that something will go wrong. For example, if you do the math correctly before you buy an investment property and know that you must account for the property sitting empty a certain percentage of the year, then that vacancy, when it occurs, will not have as negative an effect on your bottom line. It's just part of the business. Your knowledge can help secure your investments against the things that will go wrong. For this reason, you'll spend an entire chapter of this book learning how to analyze a real estate investment. Perhaps you can now see why I can't give a simple answer to the question, how much money does one need to invest in rental properties? However, I don't want you to finish reading this section without having a good number in your head, so let me offer two of the most common scenarios. First, house hacking. If you plan to purchase and live in a small multifamily property of 2 to 4 units, then you could obtain a bank loan for as low as 3.5% down through the FHA loan program. This approach, known as house hacking, is a great strategy for individuals who are just starting out with real estate and have limited cash and experience. However, to qualify, you are required to live in the property for at least 1 year. Or secondly, a conventional loan. A conventional loan is a loan that conforms to some strict government guidelines. Most banks want a minimum of 20% down for a conventional rental property loan. A number of banks will allow less, in some cases as low as 10%, while other banks will require more, like 25% or even 30%. Each bank has its own requirement, but as of the writing of this book, obtaining financing for roughly 20% down should be possible, as long as you qualify for such a loan, which we'll discuss later. Many of the examples in this book will use a conventional 20% down payment as the norm for planning and strategizing for the future, as this approach is the most common. Understand, however, that the dollar amount or down payment percentage is not as important as the concepts working below the surface. So no matter how much money you have, keep reading. If you want to read more of what I know about investing with creativity, be sure to check out my previous book, The Book on Investing in Real Estate with No and Low Money Down, which is available from Amazon, Audible, or at biggerpockets.com/no money. I have no problem with people who want to use 100% cash for their real estate purchases, completely avoiding any kind of loan. I'm a big fan of the personal finance advice of Dave Ramsey, who is a staunch advocate for always paying 100% cash for any investment property. However, I also recognize that for many people, including me, waiting to invest until all the cash needed has been saved up would require decades of sitting on the sidelines. If you decide to invest using all cash, I encourage you to pretend that you are not doing so when you're shopping for deals. Having excess money on hand when you're shopping is dangerous, whether you are at Nordstrom's, the supermarket, or looking for rental properties. Being able to pay all cash allows people to be soft on the math and pay too much for a property because writing a check is much easier than finding a great deal. Know your numbers, scrutinize each property carefully, and be sure the property you're targeting will provide a solid return on investment. Remember, price does not equal value. As Warren Buffett says, price is what you pay, value is what you get. Now, what about reserves? The past several pages have focused primarily on the down payment needed to invest in rental properties. However, there's another purpose for your cash, and that is for reserves. As the saying goes, it is better to dig a well before you are thirsty. The fact is, when investing in rental properties, things are going to go wrong. You'll have good months, bad months, and average months, and you'll never know which one you're going to get. This is why having cash reserves to cover any problems you face is so imperative. Buying a rental property and being forced in the first month to evict a tenant and invest thousands of dollars in repairs would be terrible, but this kind of thing could in fact happen. The amount of cash you should have in reserves depends on a number of factors, most notably the number of properties you own, the condition or age of those properties, the anticipated cost of fixing the properties, like would you do the work yourself, and saving for larger future big ticket expenses, as well as your management abilities. However, I would encourage you to start with 6 months of expenses for each unit you have. For example, if you own a single family home that costs you $800 per month in expenses, I'd recommend having probably $4,800 in reserves saving for that property. As you obtain more and more properties, you may be able to decrease that amount some, but it still serves as a good starting point. So how much money should you have to get started? This is going to depend on your plan, which I'll cover more in the next chapter, but the simple answer is this: enough to cover your down payment and reserves. Now, I don't want to be accused of making rental property investments sound too glamorous, so let's address some of the downsides. The top 5 difficulties of rental property investing. As I've mentioned numerous times already, I love rental property investing. It's my passion, my hobby, my career, my baby. However, it is not always fun, and I want any potential investor to know both the positives and negatives before jumping in. I don't want to discourage you, but I'd rather have you know the tune before starting the dance. The following list outlines some of the primary difficulties, dangers, and annoyances of being a rental property investor. I will also include some thoughts on how to overcome these issues. Number 1. Building wealth takes time. What? You mean rental property investing is not a get-rich-quick activity? I want my money back. Yes, incredible wealth has been built by those who own rental properties. However, that wealth has never been built overnight. Instead, generating wealth through real estate is about taking consistent action over a long period of time. The keywords there are consistent action and long period of time. Are you prepared to get into the game for the long haul? Are you ready for the ups and the downs that will come with your rental properties? If so, proceed. Number 2, it can be all-consuming. Rental property investing has a tendency to take over your life, as any passion can. My wife and I sit down for dinner each night and struggle to not talk about our rentals. When I lie in bed at night, I have to force myself not to think about all the moving parts. Even when I'm watching an episode of Friends, I find myself thinking, I wonder how much that apartment would actually rent for. Then there are vacations. Being a landlord doesn't offer you a 2-week paid vacation every year. There is no vacation auto-reply feature you can engage to deal with the maintenance emergencies while you're away. Problems happen. Anytime, any day, any year. A broken pipe does not respect your personal time. However, your business will run the way you set it up to run. If you appoint yourself the fixer of pipes, then yes, you may run into a problem when the pipe bursts. However, if you run your business like an owner instead, then you can outsource most problems and enjoy the occasional vacation. But if you are anything like me, you'll spend a good chunk of that vacation thinking, I wonder how much this place will rent for. Number 3, you have to deal with difficult people. As a rental property owner, you are not an island. You must be involved with other people. One of the things that has gotten me down in the past decade of being a landlord is being required to deal with people who aren't necessarily easy to get along with. From contractors to deadbeat tenants to bankers and other challenging individuals, sometimes you will have to associate with difficult people in difficult situations. You may need to fire a contractor who doesn't show up on time. You may need to let your property manager go when he or she can't fill a vacancy fast enough. You might have to hear that same sob story about why the rent was late for the 100th time. You will probably have to evict a tenant. Understand, however, that you can limit your exposure to difficult people by managing effectively. By doing your due diligence upfront to find a great contractor or property manager, you will reduce the probability that you will later need to fire that person. By screening your tenant exceptionally well, you'll be able to weed out the ones who will cause you the most damage. By outsourcing tasks you don't want to do, like answering phones or showing a unit, as I've done, you can decrease your interaction with difficult people in difficult situations. Number 4, it involves paperwork and bookkeeping. Here is something that no one told me when I was getting into the rental property game. There is a lot of paperwork to keep track of, from leases to forms to taxes to insurance. A good portion of an investor's time is spent just keeping the paperwork side of the business organized. I probably receive 50 pieces of mail each week that somehow involve my rental properties, and each one needs to be opened, read, dealt with, filed. Luckily, my wife is a master at handling this side of the business and keeps our life organized, because without her, I'd be an unorganized mess. Furthermore, when investing in rental properties, you absolutely must keep accurate bookkeeping and accounting records, which can be challenging. QuickBooks is not an easy software to learn, and if you stick to using spreadsheets, just prepare to juggle a lot of them. Receipts need to be logged and filed, contractors must be paid, and those charges recorded, and come spring, your taxes will begin to take on a life of their own as your rental portfolio grows. Number 5, you can lose your investment. Lastly, let's be honest, rental properties are an investment, and as the basic definition of investments would imply, you could end up losing. Now, not every rental property owner is successful, and in fact, I would argue that most mom-and-pop landlords end up losing money because they don't run an effective rental property business. However, there are ways of decreasing your risk and increasing your chances for success, and by reading this book and improving your knowledge, you are already employing one such way. There are likely other downsides to rental property investing that I didn't cover in this section, and you'll hear about them the more time you spend around landlords. We're a pretty vocal bunch. However, none of these problems are insurmountable. With the right education, networking, and systems in place, you'll do great. And that is what this book is all about. But I don't want to fix toilets at 2 a.m. When talking to people about becoming a rental property investor, the most common excuse I hear is, "But I don't want to fix toilets at 2 in the morning." Really? Me neither. Let me just clear this myth up right now. The only landlords fixing toilets at 2 in the morning are those who are not managing their properties effectively. They are running their business like a hobby rather than a business. Only once in my decade of investing in real estate have I woken up in the middle of the night to handle an emergency. And lo and behold, it wasn't actually an emergency. Yes, things happen in the middle of the night, but 99.9% of them can be fixed during business hours. And for the 0.1% of instances when you do face a middle of the night emergency, there are people who can be called. Usually it's a plumber. I don't wake up at 2 in the morning to fix toilets, and you shouldn't have to either. As I've said several times so far, you have the power to set up your business the way you want it. So don't create a business where 2 a.m. toilet fixes are even possible. The 2 a.m. toilet story that everyone seems to talk about is not something that really ever happens, but it is an excuse that millions of broke people have used to stay broke. Saying, "But I don't want to fix toilets at 2 a.m. is much easier than saying, "I don't want to invest my time and energy into an opportunity that will help me gain financial independence." So what kind of person are you? Why do so many rental property owners fail? They started investing in real estate 30 years ago with so much hope for their future. A rental house here, a duplex there, and soon they had a rental portfolio that would make anyone proud. They actively managed their properties and worked to make sure they were operating at peak efficiency. Then, several years ago, the husband and wife both retired from their day jobs and eased into retirement, funded by their rental income and Social Security. This year, they're filing for bankruptcy and losing a majority of their properties to foreclosure. Sadly, this is not a made-up example. This is a story of one of my friend's parents, and they're not alone. In fact, 95% of the units I purchased have been foreclosures that belong to landlords who have failed and lost their properties to the bank. Most of these people, I would guess, would never again be active in real estate investing. They worked hard for years to build a financial future for themselves, only to see it come tragically crashing down around them, dashing any hopes for lasting wealth creation. This begs the question, why? If real estate is as good of an investment as we, here on Bigger Pockets, make it out to be, why do so many real estate investors fail? Perhaps more importantly, how do you avoid this possibility in your own life? This question has been swimming around in my mind for some time now. Each week on the Bigger Pockets podcast, I ask our guests, what is it that sets apart successful investors from those who give up, fail, or never get started? The answers are as diverse as the personalities of the guests with whom we've spoken with. So what is it? I'm intrigued by this idea and scared that I may end up the same way. After all, as Mark Cuban famously said, everyone's a genius in a bull market. Is that what real estate is? Do some people simply get lucky while others don't? Let's look at some of the possible reasons rental property investors go broke and explore the things you can do to protect yourself. Too much risk? First, let's talk about the elephant in the room, risk. Risk is inherent to every investment there is. After all, you know the phrase, more risk, more reward. However, there is obviously a tipping point at which the risk becomes too great, as my friend's parents discovered. Perhaps it's over-leveraging properties by obtaining too many low-down deals that weren't deals after all. Or maybe it's trying to buy too many properties too fast. Maybe it's constant refinancing of the properties, pulling out all the equity and investing it in more and more deals. Whatever the reason for the bankruptcy, the risk clearly became too great, and these investors lost. As rock and roller Nick Cave sang, If you're going to dine with them cannibals, sooner or later, darling, you're going to get eaten. So how might someone prevent this? Avoid risk altogether? Invest only in 100% cash deals? Yeah, of course not. Risk is required for entrepreneurs, but learning to navigate that risk will define your success. Like a team of whitewater rafters braving the wild waves, you can't always see what the future holds, where the rocks hide just below the surface, or when the next waterfall will appear. However, by having the right people in the boat with you, keeping an eye out for potential dangers, working to avoid potential problem areas, and wearing the proper life jacket, you can avoid a premature death. I caution anyone reading this chapter, including me, to think of risk as a dangerous but powerful tool, and to never forget that this tool cuts both ways. Not enough education? Far too many people jump into buying real estate before understanding what they are doing. They simply decide that real estate is the right path for them and start purchasing properties. There's a big difference between being busy and being effective, and this is the case with a lot of real estate investors. They believe that because they are buying properties, they're going to succeed. Never mind that they bought the wrong property in the wrong area with the wrong financing. The solution to this problem is proper education. I'm not talking about get-rich-quick, late-night television kind of education. I'm talking about taking the time needed to build an educational foundation that can support your investing future. The mission of Bigger Pockets is to help individuals build this foundation through a variety of methods, including our forums, podcast, blog, and this very book you're reading. Furthermore, I encourage you to continue learning through library books, meetups, and other low-cost resources. You don't need to spend tens of thousands of dollars for an education. Information has been democratized, so you simply need to reach out and grab it. No one can do it for you. Not enough analysis? When I first began investing in real estate, I thought I knew what I was doing, but I made some big mistakes because I didn't do a careful enough analysis. Had I continued on that path, I would have been in the same boat as my friend's parents. You see, so many people buy properties without doing the right math. As I often say, without the right math going into an investment, you'll never get the right profit coming out of it. Are you working on your business or in your business? Is real estate your investment or your hobby? I believe one of the greatest reasons investors fail is that they don't treat their business like a business. Like they never develop systems to help them grow. They treat their tenants like friends. They don't create clear policies for finding good tenants. They simply approach investing like a church picnic and it shows. If you want to avoid failing, treat your rental property business the same way a CEO would look at any other business, because that is what it is. Monitor your business's health. Hire the right people to do the right jobs and continually find ways to improve your bottom line to create a long-lasting business. So why do they fail? A real estate investor may fail for a variety of reasons. However, in my limited time on this planet, I've seen the four mistakes I just listed play out time and time again in the lives of those who ultimately failed in their investments. It breaks my heart to see someone so excited about what real estate could do, only to lose it all in foreclosure or bankruptcy. Don't be that person. If you want to avoid losing all the hard work you are putting in, or all the hard work you are about to put in, pay attention to the following four points. 1. Understand that risk is a powerful but dangerous tool, so tread cautiously. 2. Build a solid educational foundation for yourself before getting in too deep. 3. Don't skimp on the math. Always understand the numbers for any property you buy. And 4. Work on your business, not in it. Treat your investments like a business, which they are. Quitting or not quitting your job through rental properties. Let's be honest. We all dream of quitting our jobs, whether next week, next year, or in the next decade. And real estate is appealing because of the financial freedom it can offer through rental properties. But when is the right time to quit? Do you need to leave your job soon to become a successful real estate investor? What if you love your job? Should you quit? Do you love your current job? My guess is that if you are reading this book, you probably don't love it. According to Forbes, nearly 2/3 of Americans are not happy at work. I know I've been there. I once worked at a large national bank and I hated it. I loved the bank and loved the coworkers, but I hated the job itself. The pressure to sell, the pressure to please, the pressure to perform. I just do not like pressure. So I quit my job and I went full-time into real estate investing. It wasn't always easy, but it was much better than working at the bank. Later, after I had stabilized much of my rental portfolio and had enough passive income to pay all the bills, I actually went back into the work world, but for a different reason. I no longer had to work. I was choosing to work to help build something amazing, which I love and respect, which is BiggerPockets. Allow me to share some thoughts on how you can quit your miserable or maybe not so miserable job and embark on a career in real estate investing, whether you plan to quit 20 days from now or 20 years from now. Remember, it won't be easy. Rental property investing is not get rich quick, but it takes commitment, persistence, and maybe even a little bit of luck. However, before you put in your 2 weeks notice, we should get a few things straight. Number one, quitting your job soon through rental properties will be tough. You can make money relatively quickly in real estate in a lot of ways, but rental property investing is not one of them. Wealth is built in the long run, and as a result, you probably are not quitting your job next week unless you already have a large amount of investment capital with which to start, or you want to make rental property investing a job, which brings me to my second point. Number two, real estate investing can be a job or an investment. Which do you want? A job is something that earns you money today to live on. You put in the hours and cash is deposited into your checking account. An investment, however, is money earned from mostly passive sources. House flipping and real estate wholesaling, for example, are clear jobs. Owning rental property is an investment, hopefully. Which one do you want? This might seem to be a strange question, and there is no universal right or wrong answer, but I believe that thinking this one through all the way is a fundamentally important thing to do. You see, there are a lot of other options if you don't love your current job. Going into full-time real estate investing should not be your only alternative to a bad job. Why? Because real estate investing for income is a job. And know that jerk from work you don't like and want to get away from? Yep, it'll be part of your real estate investing job too, in some form. Know the pressure you felt at your job to perform? Yep, that same pressure will be there as well. The grass is not necessarily greener on the other side. There is one essential truth that I harp on all the time. Find what you love to do in life more than anything else and do that for a career. If that means teaching high school math, then teach high school math. If that means traveling the world, then find a job that lets you travel the world. And if that means investing in real estate for income, then invest in real estate for income. Now, let me clarify something important here. I'm not suggesting that you should only invest in real estate if you love investing in real estate. I'm saying you should only invest in real estate as a career if you love investing in real estate. Do you see the subtle difference? I believe everyone can and should include real estate investing as part of their strategy for retirement and wealth building. However, that doesn't always include doing it full time and making a steady income from it. The beauty of owning rental properties is found in the flexibility to make the investment what you want. And if that for you means passive, then you could make it mostly passive. I'll show you how throughout this book. Number three, even if you can quit, should you? The third point I want to make is this. Even if you can quit your job because of your real estate activities, should you? Because this book focused specifically on rental property investing, I'm going to ignore the other ways to make money in real estate and get specific about rentals. To be able to quit your job and find financial freedom through rental properties, you have to be able to live off your cash flow. If your investment properties provide $3,000 per month in cash flow and you need $3,000 per month to live, you might think that quitting your job is the next logical step. This was my thought process when I quit my job the last time. I had enough cash flow from my rental properties to cover all my bills, so I quit. Then, when I sat down and spent some time working on my plan to build wealth, I realized a very important fact. I was eating my financial potential alive by destroying the greatest wealth-building device on earth, compound interest. Compound interest is the profit earned by reinvesting your profits. To quickly simplify the concept, I'll use a story. Let's pretend your bank account has $1,000 in it. That account is special and automatically earns 10% interest every year. So at the end of the first year, it now has $1,100 in it, meaning that you made yourself $100 because 10% of $1,000 is $100. If it earns 10% interest again the next year, you will not have earned $100, but rather you earned $110 because the 10% is now calculated on the $1,100 that you had in the account at the beginning of the second year. And 10% of $1,100 is $110. In other words, your previous interest positioned you to earn additional interest. Following that pattern, after 30 years, that account would have more than $18,000 in it. Now compare that with a similar scenario. What would happen to that bank account if you withdrew the $100 in interest you earned the first year and hid it under your mattress? You'd still have $1,100 total after that year, the $1,000 in the bank plus the $100 under your mattress. But at the end of year two, you will have earned just $100 in interest because the 10% is calculated only on the money in the bank account. The money under your mattress earns nothing. You could keep doing this every year for 30 years at 10%, and the most you'd ever make is $100 per year, or $3,000 in interest total, and you'll have $1,000 in the account at the end if you add nothing else to it. So what is my point? Trust me, I'm getting somewhere. And if you can understand this entire concept, you